It's always good. All right, so here we are. Wonderful. And we're going to begin. So let me just double check. Perfect. All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's Austrian Wine Time Masterclass with Roland Steindorfer. My name is Antoinette Landejean from Cork and Fork in Washington, D.C. We are a premium wine store founded by a multi-generational flying winemaker originally from Champagne, France. I'm delighted to introduce today's producer, Steindorfer Winery. The Steindorfer family has been engaged with wine for generations, creating complex, elaborate, and distinctive wines reflective of the typical character of the region. Located in a well-known national park community, here the Steindorfers abide by quality viticultural practices implemented on their 10 hectares of cultivation area. Good locations are planted with grape varieties typical of the region. The Pannonian climate, strict yield restrictions, and modern cellar technologies all guarantee the consistency in production of these high-quality fine wines. For those joining us live, we'd love to hear from you. Place your questions in the Q&A and we will get to them, time allowing. Since our guest is joining us live from Austria, quite a few hours ahead of us here in the United States, we will move immediately into the presentation. First, we will pass the microphone over to Klaus Wittauer, owner of KW Selections, importer of some of the finest wines of Austria, something he has been doing for the past two decades. Klaus, whenever you're ready.
Well, thank you, Antoinette. And I am back, like another famous Austrian once said before, I'll be back. So here I am today with Roland Steindorfer from this beautiful estate on the Neusiedlersee on the Hungarian border. So greetings, Roland. Hi, how are you doing?
Hello to everyone. Great that we can make a presentation and tasting today.
Yeah, I already poured myself the first glass of wine and guess it's not Grüner Veltliner, actually. This is a different grape variety, the Pinot Gris. So let me share my screen with you to show you a little bit about where we are going today to the Steindorfer Winery in Burgenland. And actually, Antoinette, I found a little picture of your dad and myself in your store doing a presentation down there on the left. So say hi to your dad for me. And here is Roland Steindorfer. 20 years ago, when I first started importing Austrian wines, when I first came to Burgenland, he was only 10 years old. So he was not making wine then. And when you first drive up to this little estate, you see a little a sign and a building, and it looks from the outside, you know, there's little vineyards over here, it's flat area. But then once you walk inside, they're all covered. And there's a reason for that, because there's so many high winds, because this is Pannonian flatland. So inside in the courtyard, it's absolutely gorgeous. It seems like every time I go there, the sun shines. But it's true, this area of Austria has the most sunshine of all places of Austria. And when you go back there, you come and meet those two handsome father and son team, Ernst and Roland Steindorfer. And I'm so excited to be able to work with them. And actually now Roland has grown up and, you know, 20 years later, he is now the proud owner because his dad kind of retired and turned over the winery to Roland. And he's making just as many awards as his father made. And Roland, why don't you tell us a little bit about your winery while I sip on this Pinot Gris, and then we're going to talk about this wine as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Klaus. Hello again to everyone. I am very happy that we can make that wine tasting today. So I have made myself comfortable here. So please bring yourself also in a relaxed position,
All
because
right.
today we try a really interesting extract of our Steindorfer collection. First of all, a few words about me. When I was a little boy, my parents always took me to the vineyards to show me what's going on around there. Over the years, I developed a really intense connection to nature, and it was my dream to get out the best of it. And the best you can get out of it is wine. So therefore, I decided to become a winemaker. The winery is located in the eastern part of Austria, in Burgenland. It is in a small village called Apethlon. There live about 2,000 people, and everyone knows each other. So the winery is in the fourth generation. So we have four times different life experience. And now I try to successfully continue that long tradition. So now I think it's time to try some wines.
Exactly, exactly. And Roland, I can feel for you because I grew up in a little small village too, of 3,000 people. And like you said, everybody knows each other. Yes. And also when you do things, your parents always find out right away the next day that you did something. So,
exactly.
But anyway, we drank when we were young, and you started working with your dad when you were not even, 16, 15 years old. I remember when dad started to smile and bring you back and showed, you started to present the wines because your English is a little better than your dad's English. But the tasting today, of course, we're starting, like I mentioned, with a nut, a Grüner Veltliner. We have the Pinot Gris. Then we're following with two red wines, the Apethlon Rouge and the Blaufränkisch. And then one of the specialties of the House Steindorf, so actually one of the reasons why I have hooked up with your dad, is the dessert wine, the Bärenauslese. So I know Nick is joining us as well. So the first wine is the Pinot Gris Fuchsloch. And either Roland or Nick, talk to me about this Pinot Gris.
I'll almost always defer to Roland, but I can tell him that, working for a company that has just a couple of Italian wines, we sell a lot of Pinot Gris and Pinot Grigio. And it's wonderful to see Roland's wine fit in there as something that you can obviously identify as Pinot Gris, but again, it stands out as distinctive and unique. It doesn't have the fruitiness of some of the Italian ones. It doesn't have the floral aspect of some of the Alsace ones. Instead, it has all of those things in its own unique way. They stand out very, very delicious every single time. And this has been a favorite of several accounts in Maryland where I am. And so always a pleasure to talk about it and drink it every year.
Thank you so much, Nick. So then I say a few words about this wine. The Pinot Gris, the vineyard for this wine is located on the way to the village Frauenkirchen, and it's called Fuchsloch because in that special area there were a lot of foxes former times. So you saw a ton of foxholes there. And it's located in a very sunny area with a lot of sunshine hours, and this brings a lot of ripeness into this Pinot Gris. And that is very important for us to develop its intense and exotic aromatic. So the fermentation for this wine was made in the stainless steel tanks at about 18 degrees. 80% aged afterwards in the stainless steel, and about 20% aged in used 500 liter barrels. And here we created a wine with a lot of finesse. You have a really fruity nose of ripe pears, banana, and exotic pineapple. On the palate, you have a great structure and balance, and therefore it fits very good to a little bit more spicy food like Asian food.
Yeah, this wine, you know, when I smell into it, that kind of really some place I would like to go right now is like the Caribbean. It's like that really tropical fruit aromas you smell. And then when you taste the wine, it's bone dry. That little bit of barrel fermentation or juice you add in from the barrels give that wine just a little lush richness on the background, but still it's crisp and it's fresh and it's easy to drink. You know, you're in Burgenland, so you get quite a bit of sunshine. So the 13% alcohol, it wears it very well. You don't feel, right, Nick, you don't feel any heaviness on this wine at all. It's just easy to drink.
There's no heat, but it has that hook. All those wonderful tropical fruits are beautiful, but for me, that little bit of leesiness, it develops itself with that mixture of spice and richness. And that's the thing that keeps me coming back to this wine every single year, because that has so much more character and so much more body. So many people think of Pinot Gris and Pinot Grigio as light and watery wines, or maybe throwaway wines. And this totally shatters that impression and would shock everybody who has bad Pinot Grigio, because they just, you can try this and you can see how much care goes into making it, and how much there are decisions in how to layer it and create something that is a gorgeous, gorgeous example of what you can do when you have talent and fruit like Roland has.
Yeah, and this dish over here, I found this picture the other day, and I remember we paired this at a wine dinner once with the Zander, which is the perch fillet, which actually is from the Lake Neusiedler See, so it's a local a fish. And then with that little hollandaise sauce and the fresh potatoes, there's, you know, that you can do a lot of things with potatoes, and we do a lot of things with potatoes in Austria. And I just love that. Then it also has a little bit of herb butter, and that herb butter really, really worked so well with this Pinot Gris. And it was just very flavorful dish. And that Pinot Gris was just right there. It never overpowered it, and it's wonderful. So there's so many dishes you can serve that. So it's not a Pinot Grigio, it's not a Burgundy, it's Pinot Gris from Burgundy. So well done, Roland. I'm so happy that every year you kind of knock this out. 19 again, for being a very warm vintage. It is delicious and refreshing, you know, with one and only, not even 2 gram residual sugar and 5.6 gram acidity. It's the harmony, which really, really I love about this wine. So I have to bring this up too. We're not doing this wine today at the tasting, but I happen to see a bottle. And this is just something we also do in Burgenland. And that's actually from the Chardonnay grape, except this is a very heavy, heavy, heavy bottle because it's so special. And I know Ernst has a couple good clients in Switzerland, and he exclusively made this wine for some Swiss customers for many years, where he did it in 100% oak barrel fermentation. And when this wine tastes a little older, watch out, Chassin Montrachet. But a couple of years ago, Roland, right, you guys purchased this egg, this concrete egg. And then you tried to blend a little bit from the barrel fermented Chardonnay with the egg Chardonnay, right?
Yes, we wanted to improve that Chardonnay. Former times, we called it Chardonnay Grand Reserve. And now we have here the Chardonnay Golden Cut. And here we have 70,000. That is the number of highest quality, fully ripe Chardonnay grapes, which we separated from
70,000 little berries, right?
Yes.
You counted them.
Yeah, we counted approximately.
Okay.
Not exactly.
I know you did a bucket and you counted how many you put in the bucket and you put that many buckets in the egg.
Exactly. And the egg is specially designed according to the golden cut angle. And that allows during the fermentation, the content can go in every direction. And this maximum shell contact needs to a particularly expressive style. After 24 months maturity, we blend 30% from that concrete egg with 70% of our highest quality Chardonnay from the barrique. And this blend results in a wine with extraordinary personality. The bouquet here is a lovely mix of caramel, vanilla, and also exotic fruits like banana and aromatic pineapple. And the interesting thing is that on the palate you get a really richness, but also a playful minerality, which comes from that concrete egg. That's unbelievable.
Well, I'm fortunately, we talk about this wine so much now, and it makes me really wanting to open this bottle. But I hear that the 2017 is already sold out, right? When is the next vintage coming?
The next is 2019.
And next year, when Antoinette comes to Austria, we can present this wine to her, right?
Yeah, sure.
It will be ready. So, okay, good. I might save this bottle for one of my trips to Cork and Fork, and we'll share it to her to get her ready for the Austria trip, which I hear she's doing next year. This is actually a picture from the Vivinum, where we presented this wine for the first time quite a few years ago. I think 2015 was the first vintage when we did the golden cut. Nick, you had it once before, didn't you? Or no?
Just once, and then I haven't been able to have any since then. So I want to go to Austria so I can drink more.
Well, I'll work on that. I will do my best job. So this is the Burgenland, what I've been talking about. It doesn't look like what people expect what Austrian landscape looks like, because where are the mountains? Well, there are no mountains in Burgenland. It's flat. We're going into the Hungarian lowlands, the Pannonian flat, and there used to be 100 million years ago an ocean. So it is completely flat, and that's where Burgenland is located. So we are in Austria, again, east of Paris, a little bit north of Italy, on the Hungarian, Slovenian border here. And if you look on the here, Vienna is the capital, and the wine region of Austria is all on the eastern side around Vienna. And Burgenland, the Lake Neusiedler See, Ilmitz is the right next village where Apetlon is located, is about an hour and a half drive southeast from Vienna. So what makes us so unique again is the opposite of the tension. You know, we create the grapes have to fight a little bit like, you know, the Austrian. I am from the western part of Austria, Salzburg. My home skiing is right, and the wine is on the east, especially there in Burgenland. And that's where Roland is at home. The three major wine regions of Austria, Niederösterreich, Lower Austria along the Danube, and then Burgenland a little further south on the east, where we make most of our red wines. And that's actually unique, because in Burgenland, you can produce some of the best or the best red wines of Austria, but also they make the best dessert wines. And that goes back to the 16th, 15th century that on this lake, Neusiedler See, have been crafted some of the best dessert wines in the world. there's basically three regions, Sauternes, Tokaj, and Neusiedlersee. Those are the three main regions in the world for dessert wines. But as you just saw on the Pinot Gris and even Chardonnay, we also can make some really good white wines as well. So it's unusual to have all three different wines happening. And again, what I mentioned, the climate is what gives us that opportunity. Those really warm air from the Pannonian, from the east side, we get really warm winds, and then we get the weather from the west. The French send us a little rain over the mountains, and we get that, and that creates, you know, the high winds. From the north, we get some very cool air from Poland through all the Siberian, sometimes really, really cool nights. You know, sometimes it's a little bit like when you go to San Francisco in the summertime, August. And I remember I did a trip one time, and when you go out at night, you better bring a sweater. And that's the same thing in Austria. Very warm days, but at nighttime, you better have a sweater with you because it does get chilly and cool. And then from the south again, we got a little bit humid, warm, moist air coming up from the Mediterranean. So this opposites and this climate creates those temperature differences between day and night. And that gives us this opportunity to make those really extracted, flavorful wines, but they're not over the top. So they're balanced. This shows a little bit the mountains. So it's all hilly here. There's no vineyards. When you come further east, Vienna, the Vienna woods in the Terman region is kind of the end of the Alps. We got one more other ridge here, the Leiterberg, but then around the lake, you see all these vineyards. And Apetlohn, again, Vienna here, the airport, the Danube kind of goes through here and goes into Bratislava and a little bit further south. So again, that creates a very microclimate uniqueness that Vienna is so close by with actually vineyards within the city. And then the Austrian wine law, of course, really makes it happen that we have such great producers like Roland and Ernst and so many other ones in my portfolio to really focus on quality wines. So not, it's nothing about quantity. It's all about this really high level of quality wines, which we are able to produce. Thank you to this law, which is really helping us to focus and set the standard a little bit higher than in some other countries. And of course, we implemented that because there's so many different soil types. And we cannot really just market just one grape variety like Grüner Veltliner, and that's all what Austria is about. And that's really what got me excited about Austria, is all those different grape varieties and able to produce top quality wines. There's not that much Loos where you are located, right, Roland?
Yes.
There's no Gneiss. Conglomerat, we have a little bit, but then mostly the silt and the sand, because like I mentioned, it was an old ocean, and then we also have the gravel, and then a little bit volcanic, and you know, and underneath from the ocean, you get the chalk and the limestone, and that's what creates those really, really great wines of Burgenland. And it's really, they're doing a great job. This, you have to understand, all this was used to be the Iron Curtain. So in 1997 is when 87 is. 87 is when this fell. So before Burgenland, you know, it actually wasn't really Austria until 1922. After World War One, Burgenland became one of the Austrian regions, and it was actually more poor. People didn't, because wine regions need tourism. If you don't have people coming to the wine region, the winemaker cannot sell direct. And you only make inexpensive wines. And that's really what was happening in the last century. But then once that Iron Curtain fell, Burgenland started to kick in. We were lucky with the EU giving a little bit help. And some of the wineries were able to get some inexpensive money to build some new wineries. And also you have to understand, Vienna is 2 million people. And they used to vacation in Steiermark, in Styria, and go west, but nobody wanted to go east. But now This area is catching up. Some great, great restaurants are starting to open up, a little country inns. And now people are traveling from Vienna and you see wineries popping up and great, great wineries also starting. And you guys started quite early because you, and I'm going to mention that when we get to the dessert wines with Alois Kracha, the connection always brought people to Illmitz, because one of the most famous winemakers of Austria, his home is Illmitz and Apetlohn is right the next town. And right, Roland, your dad used to be the cellar master for Alois Kracha.
Yeah, it was his best friend and also the cellar master.
Yeah, so and so actually when you wanted to buy some Alois Kracha wines, Lois didn't have any visitors at his winery. There was actually a wine store at your place. In your cellar is where you were able to purchase the Alois Kracha wines up Hof.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I went to come and visit and see you. And so this is kind of the region, the Neusiedlersee. It's a very shallow lake. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get to dessert wine. But also, Roland, like the next village, Andau, that's the warmest and most sunshine of Austria, right?
Yes, there they have the most sunshine hours of Austria. But also in our village, it's almost the same.
Yeah, and then you have, you know, Golz, where Heinrich is one of the top producers, and then Frauenkirchen with Omertum, and there's some really, really great wineries. Like I mentioned, Alois Kracha here in Illmitz, and then, of course, Steindorfer in Apetlohn. Again, tomorrow I'll be talking about the other side, the western part of the lake, the village of Rust, and that side of the lake on the Leiterberg, where we have totally different wines than on the eastern part of the lake where you are located, the Pannonian flatland. So let's just jump in right to the red wine, because that's something else you do quite well in that region. And Roland, tell us about this next wine, the Apetlohn Rouge. Well, I pour
The first wine is the Apetlohn Rouge. And as I mentioned, Apetlohn is the village where the winery is located. Therefore, we only use the typical Austrian grapes for this blend. And here we have 40% Blaufränkisch, 30% St. Laurent, and 30% Zweigelt. The vineyard for that wine is completely next to our winery, and it's on the way to the village Illmitz. So it's called Illmitzer Weg. And in our winery and our family, we call it the mom's vineyard, because my mom's love it so much and she make all the work there. Therefore, we call it mom's vineyard.
So you and your dad have to cook and wash the dishes and she works in the vineyard. Is that the way that works?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. This is beautiful. This is just such a cherry, aromatic, you know, beautiful nose.
Yeah, here with this wine, is here we wanted to bring out the typical grape aromatic, and therefore this wine aged only in used barrels. Mm. And therefore we have that beautiful fruitiness, and also from the Blaufränkisch you get that black pepper spice. And furthermore, you have a great acidity and the elegance on the palate. So this makes that wine perfect for daily drinking.
everyday drinking summer barbecue. I put a little chill on this wine. I put that in my refrigerator just an hour before the tasting and brought it out. It just has a, I mean, this is, Nick, what do you say to this?
It's just got this great swirl of red, black, and this like crushed blueberry flavor that after that fruit hits you, it goes right into these really pleasant baking spice undertones that just really bring amazing balance to this wine. It is, it's joyful, fresh, fruity wine with just that little bit of character and spice on the back end to keep you interested and keep you wanting to go back for another glass.
Yeah, and like Roland mentioned, you know, the acidity. A lot of times when you have fruity wines or manufactured wines like this, which have that same kind of aroma, they get on your palate real tired. And then if you drink the second glass, you're tired. But this one, I probably could easily drink, you know, I can just see myself with a little barbecue and probably drink that whole bottle before I know it's gone. And I still want more. So it's a perfect summer, everyday drinking red.
I like to recommend this for everybody when they talk about wine and cheese parties where they're going to go and just kind of drink and snack. I think this is a great wine for that because it has the acidity to be very, very versatile. But again, the fruit is just going to buddy up to almost anything that you eat with it.
And of course, the grapes are Blaufränkisch, St. Laurent and Zweigelt. So it's not things we say every day, but you know, that's what makes it fun. And when you buy a bottle, you know, you can just learn a little bit and then you look really good. So here is a little bit more of the details on the wine, which you of course always can find on my website, kwselection.com. And here we had an appetizer. We had like a carpaccio and then we had a little bit of a horseradish. And that wine, it was just perfect with that dish. Let me go into, you know, Zweigelt, the typical Austrian red grape, the most important red grape variety. Zweigelt, a fairly high yielding grape normally, but it grows in a lot of areas, but especially around the Neusiedler See in Appetlohn and Andau in Gols. It's the DAC red grape. So it's the main red grape for that area, close to Neuburg. It's a true Austrian grape because Professor Fritz Zweigelt, who worked at this monastery outside of Vienna in close to Neuburg, did the crossing of, again, one traditional Austrian grape and one grape. We are not quite sure if it's really Austrian or if the French had a little bit influence, but it's related to Pinot Noir. And by crossing those two, one an early ripening grape and one a late ripening grape, Professor Zweigelt created this grape, which grows quite well in Austria. And Lenz Moser, after World War II, is one who did the Hochkultur and planted it quite widely. And now it's the most planted red grape in Austria. And like I mentioned, St. Laurent, in a Pinot Noir family, you look at the grape here, the bunches are much smaller. It's a much kind of the more diva type grape, like Pinot Noir. It's very difficult in the vineyard and you really have to work it. And that's, I guess, why mom takes care of this vineyard, because you guys would be too rough on it. So it needs an easy hand and tender take, you know, tender caring. Mom is perfect for that. And then the Blaufränkisch is the real horse, Austrian grape variety, Hungarian grape, kind of our Cabernet Sauvignon, if you want to talk it to somebody, what everybody knows, but this is our deep grape. It doesn't taste like Cabernet, but it just has that robust, more tannins. And that's what, in that blend, I just love it. It's so elegant. The Blaufränkisch gives it that little, Roland, this wine kind of 2010 was the first vintage where you guys did that because your dad had a very terrible accident and you were not yet old enough to make wine then. And he fell off the ladder and lost his sense of smell and taste, right? Right during the harvest.
Yeah, it was during the harvest and then he decided to make that plant, and it was a good idea because you have that great harmony of the fruitiness and spiciness, and therefore we decided to have it until now.
Yeah, basically what Ernst was telling me then is like, you know, I can't taste, and rather than now putting stuff in barrels, I bought the barrels already, but I'm not going to use them this year. I'm going to wait till next year. I'm going to use just my used barrels, and I'm going to put everything together. And then he made me an incredible price for this wine. And 2010 overall was a very difficult vintage in Austria. So very few wineries really made reserve wines. Some of the really great producers who did make a reserve wine in 2010, now those are just some of the best wines. It's a lot of times off vintages. A good producer produces the best wines ever. And I remember tasting the 2010, and I kind of kept on asking Ernst, can we just make this again and again? And that's how we continued to have this blend in the portfolio. And like you said, Roland, it's a good thing. And I'm so happy to be able to offer this at a really good price too, to kind of an introductory red to Austrian reds and to your winery's reds as well. So it's a great value. And that takes me a little bit to history. I have to talk about Blaufränkisch, you know, the great king or Emperor Charlemagne is actually who brought grape growing to the eastern part of Europe. So he was kind of responsible for bringing us grapes to Hungary and to this part of Austria. And the Heunisch grape is kind of the mother grape for later on the Blaufränkisch, which was not really named Blaufränkisch till 1862, because the blue, the Franken, Frankonisch, and the Isch, because all the good grapes, Charlemagne put an Isch on the back, and that's the Heunisch grape. So that brings me right into the next wine, because you guys have one area up near Golz and Frauenkirchen, which has a perfect climate for Blaufränkisch. So Roland, you tell us about this beautiful vineyard Römerstein.
Yes, you have also there a lot of sunshine hours, but furthermore, the soil combination in that vineyard helps to keep us the great balance between acidity and ripeness. And that is very important for our full-bodied and complex Blaufränkisch reserve. So the fermentation was made in stainless steel. It spent 14 days on the skins before pressing. And afterwards, it aged for 17 months in new barrels. Here we have a really intense bouquet of dark berries and also some dark chocolate. And on the palate, it's really rich, full-bodied, and that comes from that 49-year-old vineyard.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm so happy that we finally, because I remember you guys are so popular in Austria, and your cousin, your father's nephew, we call him Bordeaux Michi, because the connections with Kracher, you also sell a lot of Bordeaux wines in the restaurants in Vienna, and he's a wine dealer, and he's a wine salesperson, and does such a great job with your father's wines, and they always sold out, and we always taste them too young. So I'm so happy that finally we are able to convince you guys to hold something a little bit back. And we are starting like 2017 now. It's drinking still young, but those tannins are integrated now. And it tastes a little bit more like a New World wine, but then it has the acidity. It has that, right, Nick? It has that little kick of freshness in the back.
I need you to know the nose of this wine and the aromatics are so incredible. I have three dogs, and when I popped open this bottle, every single one of them is coming over here trying to smell the bottle that's on the ground at my feet or get up to the glass over here. It is just gorgeous how this wine leaps out of the glass.
I hear them. I hear them. I hear them. They want some. So, Anne Crapill from the Wine Enthusiast liked this wine too, giving her a good score. And 2018, which is about to come on the next container, it's also well received. And here you see the vineyard during the harvest. And even so, we always have ground cover and grass all year round, but it's all about water management. You see irrigation here, but the irrigation was only put there for getting the Young's wine started. And Roland, I don't think you guys are using it at all, right?
No, we don't use it because we want to have very small grapes, because when they are small, you have a lot of skin, and in the skins you have the flavors and the tannins, and therefore we don't use it. We want very small grapes.
Yeah, so it's very stressed. So it's, you know, you have the ground, the grass, and you like organic producers. You work organic in vineyards, you're just not certified, but you do the cover crops and all kind of different things. And then depending, this was a drought, this was, I think, the 2018 harvest, if I remember correctly on that picture. Mm-hmm. It was a very hot year. So for keeping the grapes alive with water management, rather than turning on the water, you work in the grass into the soil so that doesn't take the water away anymore. And then the grapes, the water goes down, and then they have to work a little bit harder, these roots, and bring extra flavors in. And I think this is what you smell, Nick, is that little extra type of work those grapes had to do. And look at these little berries. You know, these are really beautiful Blaufränkisch grapes.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think Blaufränkisch, and I have to admit, you know, when I first started importing Austrian wines, and when I first started to get into Austrian wines about 30 years ago, I wasn't a big fan of Blaufränkisch. And one of the main reasons was because they used only new oak barrels, and they used grapes who were not rich enough or were too big and had too much water, and they couldn't absorb the flavor of the oak. And then they were kind of out, they were not balanced, they were like green. I mean, just when you concentrate something which is not totally ripe from something green, you make it greener. And that's how I felt how Blaufränkisch tasted for a long time. But now with climate change and those young winemakers like Roland telling the dad, you know, hey, dad, it's not about how many grapes you have on there. It's the quality of the grapes we need. And you guys have, you know, very few bunches. This is, you know, that's not, you do a green harvest and double green harvest and cut low yields, and especially on the St. Laurent. This is another wine we are not tasting today, but it's kind of one of the specialties. Like you mentioned, this is Mom's Vineyard, the next to the winery on the Ilmitzer Weg. So you guys, if you look for Steindorfer wines, and if you see a bottle of St. Laurent in this red label, I encourage you to pick it up, and you will be, it's like Oregon Pinot Noir on steroids. Something like that. Right, Nick?
I wouldn't argue with you. I always describe St. Laurent as having the layering and elegance of Pinot Noir, but some of the power and intensity that you can find in Syrah sometimes.
So I have to move on. I just looked at my clock, and one of the main parts for the Steindorfer Winery is the dessert wine. And I know people say, I don't do dessert wines. I don't drink dessert wines. You probably haven't had a bottle of Steindorfer dessert wine or Alois Kracher dessert wine, because these are some of the best. We call it liquid gold, because really you extract the best juice out of a grape, and that is what it's vinified. So here is actually, when I first came to the winery 20 some years ago, this was all Kracha's tanks, because Ernst used to be his cellar master, and he was responsible for making all the red wines for the Kracha estate, and also a little bit of the dessert wines. And actually, this is the tank of the 2018 Cuvée Claus, one of the parts, which in the wintertime, sometimes they put outside to slow down the fermentation, because outside it's colder than inside in the cellar. So they take the whole tank and take it outside and then slow down. And I happened to come by in January, and Ernst, I know it doesn't look so good, but trust me, that tasted really, really delicious. And that was good. And then here we got Ernst presenting some of dessert wines. We used to call it Savinkel. And then with the new DAC laws, that word was taken away from us. But now we have actually a new dessert wine DAC appellation around the Neusiedlersee. And we're going to bring it back, because that's kind of the area of the lake. And that's the Säbelschnäber, which is an original bird, is a little bit a larger duck, which was originally used, or were going to be used, for the logo for this area. But then they didn't use it. And then Ernst were able to use it for his wines. Roland, I'm going to bring you in while I pour myself some of this. And you can talk us through. I have a few pictures, but I want you to explain the wine before I show those pictures, because people sometimes, when they see those pictures, they can't believe that something that good comes out of it. So you tell us about how you produce this wine, and then I move into the, oh, this smells so good.
Yeah, go as you mentioned, here we have real liquid gold. And for this blend, for the Cuvée Claus, we have 50% Muscat Otonel and 50% Pinot Blanc. And here everything is hand harvested, and we only use botrytis grapes for that, and they stay for about 4 hours before we press it. Then the fermentation is in the stainless steel, and after that it aged for 17 months also in the stainless steel. And here we have a real powerful wine. You have that beautiful intense aromas of the ripe stone fruits and pineapple. It is so full-bodied and complex. And you also have that playful acidity, which makes it alive. And that's the interesting thing about that wine.
Yeah, it's just amazing that it's only 9% alcohol. It's so aromatic and smells so sweet, but it's not cloyingly sweet at all. It actually lets your palate almost clean. Amazing, Nick, huh? I see you tasting it. You're speechless.
I am. I mean, this is one of those things that, you know, I wish more people would drink dessert wines and be open-minded about it. Because if you said, no matter how great of a night you had with your friends and how great food, that this was going to come at the end just so your night went a little bit longer, everybody would absolutely be on board with dessert wines. This is a work of art. It is heavenly. It is delicious. I would put this up with Sauternes. One of my greatest tastings I ever did at 8 a.m. in the morning one time, we did a vertical of Dolce going back 20 years from Far Niente. And this competes with that. It shines, Roland. The nose is intoxicating. The flavors are head swimming. Everything about this wine is just wonderful. Thank you so much for continuing.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and this is kind of one of the reasons, this Lachen, what we call it, this is kind of the leftovers of the ocean. These are still salt water, these little small lachen, right?
Yes.
And they create in the fall that mist, so the fog. So as the air temperature in the fall starts to get very low at night, in the morning you have really dense fog, and that develops that mold onto the grapes. So Roland, here, take us through a beautiful ripe grape and what then happens.
Yeah, it happens that the wonderful botrytis go through the skin, and all the juice evaporates. So you only have left
a nasty looking, moldy, ugly grape. And what do you, I mean, normally this kind of, I would think I would throw away a gift to the animal, right?
Yeah, when I first saw this, when I was young, I never thought that you can get out such a great wine of it. You can get out the liquid gold. Look at the grapes. That's unbelievable. And they are, it's all natural in the vineyard. And we all have to pick them by hand. And we also have to bring out the nets, because if we don't do that, the birds will eat every grapes before we can harvest them.
Yeah, these nets, these birds are quite, I should have, next time I made a picture of the bird, they are very aggressive.
Yeah.
And they fight for these grapes, and because they know how good they are. And I'm still not quite sure why you're smiling and why you're happy here, holding this grape in your hand, because, you know, what are you going to do with this? I mean, this, I would just put down the dumpster and forget about it, but you make this stuff out of it. And it's like drip, drip. There's nothing coming out. I mean, normally out of one bunch, you kind of maybe, you know, make, you need one or two bunches for a bottle of wine, and you probably need 20 or 30 of these little bunches to make this little small bottle, correct?
Yeah, it's, you see the grapes, there's nothing in it. So it's a real special wine.
Unbelievable. And I just cannot get over it, how it leaves my mouth clean and how I actually want to have another sip from this wine. Isn't that amazing, Nick? It's not cloyingly sweet at all, but it's sweet.
It's shocking, because it takes you on a whirlwind of all the things that you look for in wines and even on your taste buds. You know, the only thing it's missing is a little saltiness. If we had a little blue cheese or something like that, your head could explode, because it has again that cloying sweet flavor, that unctuous rich umami type nose, but that acidity is in there to help pull everything off your palate and leaving you with this impression of, how did I just have a sweet dessert wine that has a dry finish to it? It's so well done.
Well, that brings me also to another dessert, which is very famous, and especially at the winery, which is called the Cardinal Schnitte. Cardinal, of course, this is the one person below the Pope, and that's made because the top looks a little bit like the cardinal head. And you just mentioned this little bitterness. We have a little raspberry jelly in between there with that really patisserie cream foam, and it looks very rich and full-bodied. And when this handsome man serves this to you, most people always say, no, I cannot eat this big piece. And then trust me, I've never seen another plate than an empty plate when we leave the winery, because everybody licks their plate when I don't look. And it looks big, it looks rich. And then together with this dessert wine, that little raspberry, and, you know, it's a sweet dessert, but it's not totally sweet. it just works together. But of course, cheese, blue cheese and nuts and things like this, I think more people should really, you know, end of the dinner or, you know, when they do that, a dessert wine like this is just fresh and delicious. And of course, foie gras and things like that work also well with that.
The cardinal slice is the perfect foil for this. I have to share the story, pardon me, indulge me if you will. When I first went over there to visit, I thought it was crazy that you and Roland were bringing down so many cakes, because I feel like there were 13, maybe 16, counting everybody from Roland's family that were there. And you had at least six cakes. And six of them, I'm thinking, that is so much dessert. It's crazy. We are never, ever going to eat all this much. And I remember at the end, we had to hide two just so that there were some more for later that night, because everybody was looking for another little piece of that and more of this beautiful, beautiful wine.
Yeah, this is what you look like when you drink this wine. You are happy. It makes you happy. So, you know, this is really at the winery. And this guy, actually, Michael, if you guys, anybody is interested, when as we are opening up again and traveling to Austria, he has a little small business, Wine X1. You can just contact me and he can set you up. He has a little small place on the Neusiedler See, and he has this little small van where he takes you from winery to winery. So if you do real wine traveling, please talk to me, and Michael and I can set you up also for a wonderful visit to Roland. And, you know, this is what people usually look like when we go to the wineries. They are happy. So we want to say thank you, and we want to open up so we can see Roland in his full space again, and Antoinette. And if there's any questions came in, I think I made my timing okay. I didn't blather too much like I usually do. So thank you, Roland, and back to Antoinette.
Well, thank you for this incredible presentation and introduction to this beautiful estate. Roland, Klaus, and Nick, any final thoughts before we say goodnight?
I'm torn between wanting everybody, excuse me, sorry about my dogs. I'm torn between wanting everyone in the world to try Cuvée Klaus and then not wanting everybody to try it. Because once you get a hold of it, I have friends that now continually ask me, can I get more, can I get more, can I get more? And they went from buying one or two bottles to now they're buying cases, because this is just another example of when you find something that is so well done, buy it, buy multiples and enjoy it. Share it with everyone else and let everybody see just how great Austria is doing at climbing their way up the wine world into what everybody should be drinking now.
Well, I got good news for everyone. 2018 was a very good vintage for dessert wine. It was actually an unusual vintage because it was good for dessert and red wine, which usually doesn't happen, right, Roland?
Yeah, it was a really, really good vintage because we had that warm weather. We have fully ripe red grapes, but also we had that botrytis afterwards, and therefore we had both in that great vintage.
Yeah, so there's, you saw the tank. It was actually a fairly big tank for dessert wine, which I showed you the picture. Normally I don't do that, but so drink up. And I want to say thank you for giving us this time to present the Steindorfer Winery. And Roland, thank you for staying up late for us. And we can't wait. I think the Cardinal Schnitte is something I'm really missing. It's kind of, I'm feeling now a year without Cardinal Schnitte. That is pretty difficult.
I have to say also thank you to everybody. It was a great tasting, and I hope to see you in Austria. That would be a pleasure for me.
Cheers.
Excellent. Well, thank you again for joining us today, Roland, Klaus, and Nick. For those viewing, we appreciate your interest in the great wines of Austria. We encourage you to visit our website calendar at corkandfork.co to view the upcoming Austrian wine events with some of the region's greatest producers, such as our guests this evening. Thank you again to all, wishing everyone a lovely evening, and I'm going to end the meeting for all momentarily. So thanks again. Good night, everyone. See you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.